You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 10 a.m. Up next is Air Cascadia with Chris Andre.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Underground Graduate School. Classes that begin in September include The Problem with Privilege, Direct Action Organizing, and Decoding Plants, Seeing Urban Flora with New Eyes. Portland Underground Graduate School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, future classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Monday, August 29th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on the air, KBOO.fm on the web. Well, it's as we roll into Labor Day and the end of summer, the national news suddenly drops and mysteriously drops off. This only means one thing, and that is that there's a hell of a lot going on that we don't know about. Silence in this country, anyway, means a lot. Other countries, they just make, you know, they make it up as they go along, which is our everyday practice. But these holiday silences have come to signify that we were about to get the old royal. Well, that said, we move right into what we definitely know is news, and we know that it's almost predictably misreported or reported with a slant from the mainstream sources. That said, our guest today, though, one source that is utterly reliable and dependable, Stephen Zunis. He's a professor of politics and international studies at University of San Francisco. He's a coordinator of a program in Middle Eastern studies and recognized as one of the country's leading scholars of U.S. Middle East policy, which explains why we laugh so much when Stephen's a guest on the show, because the U.S. Middle East policy's got to be a comedian's dream come true. It's a shipwreck which no one ever runs out of treasure. We've got a couple other headlines that I want to touch on very briefly. As you know, as things stand now, the camp in the Dakotas, where the Dakota Lakota Sioux nations led by the Standing Rock Sioux, the nation, the tribe, which will be primarily affected by the Dakota Access Pipeline, have taken this national, and at first, the reaction from media, mainstream, as well as media on the left, I have to say, got to tell you, that there was pretty much silence also from the left, probably thinking that this was a story, but not, you know, maybe not much of a story, and that it would blow over. It's done anything but. Nations are arriving from all across North America in support of the Lakota Dakota Sioux, and to voice their concerns about similar environmental injustice that has been destroying tribes across the country. That said, moving right along, structure changes. Two state river dams in Washington state are helping more endangered sockeye salmon make the trip upstream to central Idaho. What? No, structural changes to the dams aren't going to help. Getting rid of the dams are what's going to help. We have a situation here in Oregon where one spawning stream for summer sockeye salmon. That's all that's left of the water that's cool enough to sustain the fish when they spawn. That's very bad news. And dumping ice cubes in it is probably not going to help. Certainly not. It's not a long-term solution. For one thing, what if we run out of oil and don't have the gas to drive ice cubes up to the stream? Now you got a serious problem. And that said, there are, of course, one of the main things too, and underlying that deadening rumble that we hear constantly, the election, the countdown to that dreaded day in November, that goes on all the time, Democrats and Republicans, of course, on Iran. Here's a point of discussion where they seem to share common ground, but do they really? And which one is more likely to blow up that ground? Hillary is the biggest hawk that's come down the no pun intended pipeline in a while. Stephen, they agree on this. Is this a political election grandstanding? They both have, it's been long before the election, both of them, these sides wanted to nuke the Iranians back to, I don't know, pick an age, any age.
Oh, I think one thing that was missing in a lot of the coverage of the platforms of both the Democratic and Republican parties is that they were both quite, not only were they very belligerent when it came to Iran, but they're actually more belligerent than they were 4 years ago. And in the intervening time, of course, we had this landmark nuclear deal, a comprehensive agreement with strict provisions limiting Iran's nuclear capabilities to well below the threshold to develop atomic weapons, and it subjects Iran to the most rigorous inspection regime in history. And it's dramatically reduced regional tensions and has completely eliminated any potential threat to U.S. national security. And yet, there are these very hostile planks in the platform. The Republicans, claim that this U.N.-sponsored and endorsed treaty was nothing more than a, quote, personal agreement between the president and is non-binding on the next president. And despite it being technologically impossible to weaponize Iran's, at this point, very limited fissionable material, the platform insists that the agreement somehow enables Iran to continue to develop a nuclear weapon. It claims the treaty somehow allows for Iran to sponsor terrorism across the region and abuse the human rights of its citizens and other crimes that aren't any are not even addressed in the agreement, and that insists that despite the agreement, Iran is somehow close to having nuclear weapons and therefore gravely threatens our security, our interests, and the survival of our friends. And the Republican president must retain all options in dealing with Iran. Now, the Democratic platform, by contrast, does endorse the nuclear deal. However, it declares that a Democratic president will, quote, not hesitate to take military action if Iran violates the agreement. This raises a couple points. I mean, first of all, in the unlikely event Iran did decide to violate the agreement, it would take them at least a few years to rebuild their nuclear program to the point where they could develop even a single nuclear weapon, which would, allow plenty of time for the international community to apply non-military pressures, to force the regime to resume compliance. But they're saying, oh, no, we can't wait for that. We cannot hesitate to use military force, which is illegal because not only is such aggressive war illegal in terms of the UN Charter, but the Security Council Resolution 2231, which codified the agreement, was adopted under Article 41 of the UN Charter, which empowers the Security Council to decide what measures not involving the use of armed force are to be employed to give effect to its decisions. Okay, this is distinct from Article 42, right, which does allow military force only if non-military means have proved to be inadequate. In other words, where basically the Democratic Party is saying to hell with international law, to hell with the United Nations, we somehow have the right to unilaterally make war, and even though we were only one of seven countries who negotiated the agreement on behalf of the UN, and yet somehow, you know, the Hillary Clinton and her supporters insisted on including this clause around U.S. unilateralism, the same language that was used to justify the invasion of Iraq back in 2003. In other words, Hillary has not learned.
But that worked out. How did that work out for him? Well, you have to laugh at it because it's so inept. How can someone with her experience as Secretary of State possibly be confused over Article 41 as distinct from Article 42?
But she's always been hostile towards Iran. During the presidential campaign in 2008, when she and Barack Obama were running head-to-head, she accused him of being naive and irresponsible for wanting to engage with Iran diplomatically. And when she was Secretary of State, Time magazine reported how administration officials noted she was, quote, skeptical of diplomacy with Iran and firmly opposed talk of a containment policy that would be an alternative to military action should negotiations with Tehran fail. And so again, she's always been hawkish. And I should also mention that both platforms, you know, even putting aside the nuclear agreement, go totally over the top when it comes to Iran. Now, Iran has a reactionary theocratic regime. It's really bad news. I don't want to sound like I'm underscoring that there's some legitimate concerns regarding the government there. But they're the only country mentioned by name in the Republican platform as being a sponsor of Islamic terrorism, despite the fact that the majority of such groups are Salafist and are strongly opposed to the Iranian regime. And Iran has been directly involved in fighting such groups in Syria, Iraq, and elsewhere. In a similar manner, the Democratic platform states that, quote, Iran is the leading state sponsor of terrorism, though many analysts, of course, would argue that Saudi Arabia plays a far more significant role. And incidentally, the same platform calls for we must maintain our robust security cooperation with Saudi Arabia. And then it goes on even crazier. The Democratic platform blames Iran for its alleged support for terrorist groups like Hamas and pledges to push back against such actions. But Iran does not support Hamas. I mean, there was some very limited and targeted aid several years ago, but Hamas and Iran are on really bad terms. They're on opposite sides in the Syrian civil war. Geopolitically, theologically, politically, they're at serious odds. And you know, and in fact, you know, the internet, you know, repeatedly they've been talking about, oh, this diplomatic office, you know, that Hamas has in Damascus. They closed that over 5 years ago. Their main that diplomatic office is in Doha, Qatar. But Qatar is a U.S. ally, again, one of those which the Democrats want to enhance our security cooperation with. But they don't mention that, you know. So again, look back to 2003. Accusations of supporting Palestinian terrorism, accusations of developing nuclear weapons, et cetera, and somehow the United States has the right to unilaterally make war to stop this alleged threat. It's the same kind of language that got us in the tragic situation in Iraq that has spilled over to other countries. And here we are. Both parties are using the same kind of rhetoric in their platforms here in 2016.
Stephen, thank you so much. I had other questions, too. It seems, it really seems that it's a classic Ponzi. It's a three-card Monty situation, and people really don't have much understanding, or they are using ignorance to conceal whatever other ulterior motives either side might have. But the ignorance is so astounding that it's difficult to believe any of that. All you can really do is laugh at it and lay it all out. Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate you coming on the show again today. My guest has been Dr. Stephen Zudis, Professor of Political International Studies at the University of San Francisco, just back from an engagement of overseas teaching. This has been a Cascadia for Monday, August 29, 2016. Engineering for us today is Natasha Delafine and Kathleen Stevens, of course, KBOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts.